Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number 41 of Mixed Martial Analysis. And in this episode, what I kind of want to do is I just want to get through the prelims real quick. I don't want to jump into any like news or opinion or like try to break down any topics really circulating in the world of MMA. But I really just want to get through the four fights on the prelim card and kind of break those down and give you my predictions for those. So this podcast is going to be a little bit more condensed. And then tomorrow, I'm almost done getting my notes and stuff ready for the main card. So tomorrow I'll release a podcast going over my picks for the main card, and we'll get into some more topics and news and getting a little more in depth with things then. But today, keeping it simple. That being said, if you guys have, I mean, as always, throw your fucking opinions in the comment section, right? Like there's so many things that a lot of people sometimes comment there and I'll be like, oh fuck, I didn't even consider that. But, and hindsight's 2020, right? But it helps me out moving forward. Cause then I can go, oh shit. Like, for example, one guy just pointed out that Bryce Mitchell just got his black belt recently. And when I went to like Wikipedia, it said brown, and I think they just recently updated it. So, but you guys commenting and us interacting on there, just like, it not only helps the channel, right? But it also helps, I mean, the conversation just expands everybody's knowledge. So when you guys are commenting on shit, I hate this about the MMA community. They tend to be very like tribal about fights and stuff. Like, you're not really allowed to just casually watch fights. Like, if your friend just casually watches them, it's almost like, oh, well, he's not a hardcore fan. Oh, he doesn't know this. And people are mean to each other in comments, man. Like, I've never understood why when people comment on shit, it's got to be like an attack. Or like when they comment on something, they'll say, well, did you know this? Well, why can't you just like be like, why can't you just state it more fairly? So when you guys are commenting on shit on the channel, be nice to each other. If you are using it, collaborate, you know what I mean? Like, use it to expand your knowledge of MMA. There's no way you know everything, right? There's no way I know everything. There's no way anyone does. So use it as a, that's how, I mean, if I wanted this channel, like, the one goal that I have for it is for it to be a place where, like, MMA is, I mean, discussed in a rational and, I mean, like I said, from an educated perspective. Like I said, I don't claim to know anything. I'm going to do a lot of these picks, and I'm going to get a lot of shit wrong. I'm going to say some shit on here that a lot of you guys are going to go, what the fuck is he talking about? And that's probably because you guys are just going to have more in-depth knowledge in other areas, right? Like I said, just be nice to each other when you comment and keep things educational. Like, we're all here to learn from each other, right? So don't be dickheads in the comments. I especially hate when I see two MMA fans being mean to each other. I'm like, what are you being mean about? Like, why are you being a dickhead? You're not involved in the fight. You're not like, you're not, why are you getting so emotionally invested in being right about something? Like, it's okay to be wrong about shit, and it's okay to like have your opinions on things, but just keep them respectful. Anyway, that's my rant on that. Also, somebody else commented, and they made a good point because I've thought about this a lot before, that there's something wrong with the name. And when I think about the name Mixed Martial Analysis, it is a fucking mouthful. And I also think that, like, I want to launch a website at some point. And if I were to ever go in there and like register a domain name, and I've done this, by the way, and I canceled it because I was like, eh, it's just not working. MixedMartialAnalysis.com. It doesn't exactly roll off the fucking tongue. It's a mouthful. So I'm actually thinking about changing the name of this channel. If you guys have any suggestions, please leave them in the comments. I'm not married to the idea of the name. I just needed something. It was kind of like a play on MMA, and you know, that's where we're at. But some exciting news. I did just cross 100 subscribers on the channel, so thank you very much to each and every one of you. Much appreciated. Otherwise, I'd just be talking into nothing, right? So thank you to everybody who subscribed so far. And without further ado, let's get into breaking this card down today. So the very first matchup on the prelims, which I believe are going to air on ESPN on Saturday, it's a middleweight bout between number 10 ranked Jacare Souza and, number 14 ranked Jacare Souza and number 10 ranked Uriah Hall. And this fight is super interesting because it's like, you've got a guy in Uriah Hall who's very dynamic and explosive, and his striking is very quick and snappy, and he's got a great jab. And then you've got a guy in Jacare Souza who's obviously renowned for his jiu-jitsu, is renowned, like world renowned, right? I think you could safely say that Jacare Souza is the most accomplished jiu-jitsu practitioner in the middleweight division and one of the most accomplished in all of the UFC, without a doubt. His jiu-jitsu is beautiful. He's got, and he's, like I said, these two have a little bit different styles, whereas like Jacare fights very heavy on the front foot and he's marching forward and he's got, I mean, he's got power in his hands too. And he's much more willing to sit down on his punches, whereas Uriah Hall is going to be doing a lot more movement, a lot more dancing, a lot of trying to draw. He's probably going to try to do a lot of drawing Jacare into his striking range while keeping his back off the fence, because that's where they can engage in the clinch. And if you look back through Uriah Hall's career, there are examples of people like, I mean, like Gegard Mousasi, for example, when he got him to the ground, was able to dominate him there. And there are other ones, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but there are other situations where Uriah ended up on the ground. He can get back to his feet and he can survive sometimes, but like, if he, Antonio Carlos Jr. is another example. Like, I just think that one of the dangers in fighting Jacare for Uriah Hall is that when he gets into these grappling situations, as good as Antonio Carlos Jr. is and as like good as Mousasi is, and they're not Jacare on the ground, right? And I think that Jacare, especially if he can, Jacare is not really a bottom guard player. He's more, you can tell by the way he's built that he's obviously built to put pressure on people. He's fucking dense. Like I said, he's a big guy. And I think that at some point, this is just how I see the fight going, right? And like I said, you always have to rely on the, not rely on it, but like take into consideration the unpredictability factor of Uriah Hall, because he'll also, there are, I mean, like Bevon Lewis, other people throughout, I'm trying to fucking think, like, well, the first Mousasi fight, I think in the first round, he either knocked him out in the first or second round, I can't remember, but early on you were kind of like, fuck, I think Mousasi controlled him on the ground, and then Uriah landed that spinning kick to the body in the second. I might be remembering the fight wrong, I apologize if so. But my point is that when you back Uriah Hall into these corners, he's like a caged animal, right? And then it's like he's got to react somehow, and sometimes he'll end up with these brilliant knockouts. But it's almost like, and tell me what you guys think about this. This is just the vibe I get from watching Uriah Hall fight. I always just feel like you have to put him in a situation where he has no other choice but to respond when he's going to pull that shit out. I think he always has struggled throughout his career, and he kind of talks about the mental aspect of MMA. He kind of struggles to let his hands go and really put things together. But when you back him into a corner and he doesn't have a choice, he shines. The problem is going to be that opportunity is not going to come on the ground. I think Jacare is going to be marching him down, keeping his hands high. And it's not like Uriah Hall can't finish him, but he's going to have to be very active, very aware. He's going to have to be aware of so many different things, because Jacare is just going to, like I said, continually march him down. And I'm looking for Jacare to put Uriah Hall's back up against the cage and start engaging in the clinch. And like, this is one of those fights where I think Jacare has a clear advantage on the ground, and Uriah Hall potentially, because like I said, you don't know what you're going to get out of him sometimes. So Uriah Hall potentially has an advantage on the feet, but Uriah Hall does get backed up. He does engage in a lot of clinch battles, and he has a wonderful jab and he snaps it out there. And it's like I said, he does so many things so well, but I just think over the course of this fight in particular, it's just a matter of time before it gets to the cage. And once it gets there, I think Jacare is going to be significantly better than Hall on the ground. And I think he'll be able to get the fight to the ground. So I'm going with Jacare. I think like a second round submission, I think you'll kind of see like, I could see this fight going in waves a little bit where like Jacare takes him down and then Uriah Hall manages to work back to his feet. And then maybe he's landing some volume on Jacare and the output from Jacare will slow down. And then he'll have to pick it back up when he regains his energy. And then I think that Uriah Hall will be able to survive relatively well early. And that'll be a little bit exhausting for Jacare. And the more that the fight goes on and the more that like Uriah Hall starts finding success on the feet, like if he's able to find that distance and stuff, Jacare is going to have an even a higher sense of urgency to get this fight to the ground. So I'm going with Jacare late second, maybe early third round submission. But like I said, never count out the unpredictability. And his striking is clearly very advanced. Don't count Uriah Hall out of this fight, because he can end it at any time. I just think that like you also, I mean, one of the things to keep in mind is obviously that Jacare has serious power in his hands and that he can box. Like if you go watch him fight Chris Weidman, I'm not saying Chris Weidman is he's not like an Israel Adesanya in terms of like his setups and his versatility and the variety in his attacks and stuff, right? But he was he was fighting well in that fight on the feet, and Jacare was just able to overcome it and start marching him down. And I think that, like, a lot of Uriah Hall's really explosive movements and some of his best weapons are going to happen when he has some space. And I think Jacare is always going to be, like, just pressing forward like a zombie, and he's just going to be willing to eat some of that stuff. And I think that, like, it's going to – the way that Jacare advances and cuts the octagon off, it's going to be kind of hard for Uriah Hall to get that range that he wants and land at the end of his shots where the most explosion will be. I think that Jacare is going to keep it close, and he's going to look to engage in a lot of clinch and ground fighting in this one. So Jacare, late second, early third round submission, not sure. Like I said, don't sleep on Uriah Hall, though. He could end it at any time. Okay, moving on. We've got a women's strawweight bout between number 7 ranked Carla Esparza and number 8 ranked Michelle Waterson. And this, to be honest, out of all the fights on the prelims that we're going over right here, I feel like I have the most confidence in who's going to win this one. And watch, I'll say that. My guess will be completely fucking off. But when you watch Carla Esparza fight, her style is primarily boxing and wrestling. And the problem is that she's a really good wrestler. Carla Esparza, by the way, very important for the women's strawweight division, right? Like, she's a staple of the sport. Like, she's very good. But when she went up against Tatiana Suarez, you got to see the difference between, like, her grappling and elite, I mean, like, really high-level grappling, right? Tatiana Suarez is probably the most impressive grappler in women's MMA that we've ever seen. Most accomplished, probably, too, right? So you got to see that, like, there's a difference there. And, you know, Carla Esparza's fought everyone, man. And it's like, you kind of know what her style's like. And she's got – Michelle Waterson's going to be a little bit longer than her. And I really like the fact that Michelle Waterson has – the option to go into her toolbox and pull out the kicks. Whereas Carla's not going to have as much versatility with her kicks. Not that she can't throw leg kicks, but her kicks are never going to be as refined or as smooth as Michelle's. And I think that, like, a lot of the success that Carla Esparza finds is because she's putting pressure on people, engaging in boxing exchanges, and then, like, getting people off the break and hitting people off the break and doing things that veterans do, right? But Michelle Waterson's a veteran as well. I mean, she's got a record of 17-7. Carla Esparza's 15-6. I mean, these girls have over, like, 40 fights combined. So both are veterans, but I really think the big difference here will be the kicks, and this is why. I think that if Michelle Waterson can start working the kicks, it's going to keep Carla Esparza at range. And I think early on in the fight, like the first round, you're going to see that kind of, like, it's not going to frustrate Carla too bad. But as the fight wears on, it's going to she's not going to be able to get into the range that she wants, and then she's going to start hunting for takedowns. And when you start getting backed into a hole, right, where, like, the takedown becomes the clear, obvious option, that's going to be your path to victory. When that becomes, like, your only way to win, the opponent knows it. And I think that Carla will eventually start not setting up shots. She's going to start shooting without setting them up. And I think that that's going to play into the hands of Michelle Waterson, because, like, with the kicks, Michelle's going to be keeping her at bay. And Carla, if she can't set things up with the hands, her only other option is to cut the octagon off and try to force the fight up against the cage, or she's going to have to get a takedown. And if she can't set the takedown up with her hands and she's not able to back Michelle up against the cage, which I think is going to be the case, I think Michelle's footwork is going to keep her circling around the octagon. That's going to cause Carla to take ill-advised shots. They're not going to be set up and she's going to be far away. And I think that's really going to play into the judo skill set of Michelle Waterson. Her nickname's a karate hottie, but don't forget that she has like 9 submissions in her career out of 17 wins. So most of her wins come via submission. She has really good jiu-jitsu. And I'm not positive that she's going to be able to take Carla out. Like, I don't know if she's actually going to be able to tap her. But I do think that, like I said, she's going to be kept at bay. And then Carla's going to get over – she's going to get – I don't know what the word is, right? Over-anxious, over-eager, over-excited, and go for takedowns that aren't there. And it'll really play into the judo of Michelle Waterson, because she'll be able to use that momentum to set up her takedowns. And you see her hit that stuff all the time, hip tosses and stuff. So – Carla has to be very careful. Now, all that being said, it's not like Carla Esparza can't win this fight. I think that if she does want to win, she has to turn it into a dog fight, push it up against the fence. And, like, honestly, I wouldn't get into too many grappling exchanges with Michelle because of her judo and because of her takedowns and because of her timing and her balance on things. I would, if I'm Carla, I'm back. I'm trying to cut Michelle off. I'm trying to keep her back against the cage. And I'm trying to keep this in boxing range. And I'm not afraid to mix in takedowns, but I'm not just going to hunt for it to put it there. You know what I mean? So for Michelle Waterson, much more of a karate fight when she's standing and then relying on her judo game and stuff. And just frustrating Carla, I think, is the game plan for her. And Carla's game plan is going to be more like, You gotta turn it into a brawl, turn it into a dogfight, and kind of break through that in order to get into the range that you need to for Michelle. Don't let her set up kicks and stuff early and establish it, because once she establishes it, now you have to work out of a hole. So I would kind of expect Carla to be aggressive early on in this fight. Okay, moving on. We now have Fabricio Werdum, who is unranked according to the website, but obviously one of the great, according to the UFC website, but obviously one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. He's taken on Alexei Oleinik, who's currently ranked number 12. And between these two, I mean, goddamn, I don't even know how many submission wins they have. I guess I could look it up for you guys, right? That would make sense. But let me see. Alexei Oleinik. I know he's got like over 50 wins on his resume. 58, 13, and 1. Let's see how many submission wins. 46 of those wins have come by way of submission. So these two combined, I don't even know. I mean, how many does Fabricio Werdum have in his career, right? Sorry, I should have already had this pulled up before I started talking about it, but 11 wins by submission. But he's also got some knockouts on there, and this fight's kind of hard to pick. I think if you look at it on paper, like, the appeal is that they're both submission artists, but I just think the difference is that, like, Fabricio is one of the best. I think his boxing is a little bit more crisp than Alexei's, and I just don't think, like, when you watch a lot of Alexei Oleinik's submissions, it's not that they're not well set up, and it's not that they're not brilliant. They're very creative, but it is more of, like, he gets guys in these, like, almost tricky situations where you wouldn't expect to be submitted, like from the bottom of mount with an Ezekiel, where I don't think that stuff is going to work on a high level grappler like Fabricio Werdum. And like, you've seen Verdum's hands and stuff, and, you know, knocking out Cain Velasquez. I just think that this is a tough fight stylistically for Oleinik to win, because it's not that he doesn't have power in his hands, but his striking is going to come from these wide looping angles, whereas I think Fabricio Werdum is going to come straight down the pipe with more stuff. I think his boxing will be better. I just think that this is too much of a challenge for Alexei Oleinik to overcome. Like I said, I don't think he has a very good chance of tapping Fabricio on the feet. I mean, the ground is Fabricio Verdum's world, and I think I just said tapping him on the feet. I don't think he has a chance of tapping him, and I think Fabricio will have an advantage on the feet. Anyway, I'm taking Fabricio Werdum in this one. I could see it going to decision, but I could also see Werdum just overwhelming Oleinik, tiring him out, submitting him, or knocking him out via ground and pound. But I got Werdum in this one. This one just feels like, to me, it feels like a mismatch. Like, not that Olenek's not good, not that he can't threaten, but it feels like Fabricio Werdum has the upper hand going into this fight, to me at least. Okay, we're going to move on to the main event for the prelims, right, on ESPN. And this is going to be a welterweight bout between Anthony Pettis and Cowboy Cerrone. Now, Cowboy is obviously riding a losing streak. He's lost to Conor McGregor. He's lost to, I have it written down, Justin Gaethje, and then Tony Ferguson before that. So, I mean, all to the top guys in the division, right? Like, I don't think you're going to argue that any of those guys aren't top five. But it makes you a little bit nervous, man. I mean, knocked out pretty brutally, too, against Gaethje and against Conor. I mean, those are hard knockouts. And, like, the fight against Tony, he probably could have kept fighting. But, you know, the whole swollen eye shit. So, this is a rematch, too, right? And these guys fought a long time ago. And Anthony Pettis kind of switched off to the southpaw stance. And if you go watch that fight, Joe Rogan called it perfectly. Like, Pettis switched off to the southpaw stance and started firing kicks to that body. And that's what ended up ending the fight. Like, he saw the opening there and he had the power kick coming from the left-hand side and he was just driving it into the fucking side of Cowboy Cerrone, like into his ribs, and it eventually ended up ending the fight, right? And Cowboy's been susceptible to the body before, especially because of all that fucking shit that he had going on with his, like, guts. I don't know what the fuck happened. Didn't he have, like, a certain amount of, like, length of his intestines removed or some shit like that? So, like, people know that about him. And to me, like, the biggest difference in this fight between these two fighters is that Cowboy is probably going to mark. I don't mean to say that Cowboy's not creative. Please don't take this the wrong way. Like, but I do think, like, Cowboy's creative in how he sets things up and how he, like, how he gets his combinations, like the combination that he landed on, I think it was like Rick Story, right? Beautiful, gorgeous. I mean, the way he set it up, can't say that's not creative, but Anthony Pettis is much more willing to try wild and spontaneous things, I guess, in the octagon, or, and just there's more variety and there's more flash to what he does. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference maker in this fight. I think that Pettis's creativity will throw Cowboy off. Like, it's going to just be, he's going to overwhelm him with possibilities, whereas Cowboy is going to rely on the, like, coming forward, throwing classic Muay Thai, like, kickboxing combinations and trying to set, like, he's trying to set a clean combination up, whereas Anthony Pettis will launch off the fucking cage or do, like, axe kicks and rolling thunder. Not literally. You know what I mean, though. He'll pull crazy shit out of his ass. And it lands, and I think that that's going to give Cowboy some trouble and it'll confuse him. I think that's why you kind of saw him get confused against the shoulder strikes of Connor. Like, he looked almost confused when it hit him. Obviously, he's rock, right? He broke his fucking orbital bone. But, like, I think that Cowboy just relies on a much more traditional path to success. Now, another interesting thing that we might see in this fight is a ground war, because both of these guys have very slept on jiu-jitsu. Donald Cerrone, I'm going to give the advantage to him in wrestling. I'm going to give the jiu-jitsu advantage, believe it or not, to Anthony Pettis. Anthony Pettis is so fucking good off his back. I mean, the way he sets things up is, like, if you look at the fucking, I think he hit him with an armbar, maybe an armbar triangle. I can't remember off the top of my head. But when he tapped Chiesa out from the bottom, I mean, he tapped Benson Henderson out from the bottom with the armbar. I mean, Anthony Pettis' jiu-jitsu is fucking solid. Rock solid. And people forget about it because he's so advanced on the feet and so threatening up there. Right now, all that I think it'll be hard for Anthony Pettis to tap Cowboy because his ground game is so solid. I think you might see a lot of really interesting transitions if it goes there. But one thing to keep in mind about Anthony Pettis, and this has kind of been the, like, I hate to say this about a fighter because I'm not a fighter. I don't go in there and I don't do it. Like, I don't go into the octagon and strap the gloves up and, like, go through that whole entire process. I can't even imagine how fucking stressful it all is, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying that I have the balls to do it, right? But you can kind of break Anthony Pettis mentally, it seems. Like Tony Ferguson, Poirier, RDA. Like, when you start running through him and really just putting heavy pressure on him, he doesn't have the space in a similar way to Uriah Hall, right? Like, he needs space to be his most creative and his most effective. Cowboy has to eliminate that space a little bit. And just like us, it's okay to keep things like there's nothing wrong with keeping like a traditional, like, kickboxing or Muay Thai style, right? When you're fighting a guy like Pettis, I think Cowboy probably leans a little more towards kickboxing style, like, as opposed to Muay Thai. But I think that the way you beat Pettis is you got to put pressure on a man, and Cowboy has to keep the volume coming. And he can't really be waiting on things from Pettis, because that's where Pettis is going to start to find the openings and the holes. He's really good at exploiting those. And when he starts getting his timing and things start happening on... Pettis is one of... someone needs to do a case study on Pettis, because there will be fights where, like... I would love to know what's going on in his mind. Because there will be fights where Anthony Pettis fights and I go, man, you're not going to be able to beat this fucking guy. Like... when he gets into a zone and he gets into a rhythm, he is one of the biggest problems in the UFC. No doubt about it. Anthony Pettis is like my definition of a rhythm fighter. When he gets going, good luck, man. I mean, see, I know it doesn't happen all the time, but you can just tell that when he gets into that zone, he's in a place that other guys just aren't, right? Like I said, caveat there is that you can sometimes get him. I don't know if he mentally, I don't know what's going on in there, man. I'm not there. I'm not him, and I don't want to accuse him. But I just, like, I bring this question up all the time. had the position been reversed, and Tony Ferguson broke his hand, do you think Tony Ferguson would have even brought it up to his corner? I think he just would have fought through it. I mean, that's my personal take on it. That's what I mean, though. Like, I'm not doing it to be disrespectful to Anthony, and I'm certainly not saying that, like, I would want to be in a cage against Tony Ferguson with a broken hand. Not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that there are guys like Tony Ferguson out there that don't give a fuck. So, you can – Cowboy needs pressure. He needs constant volume, and he needs to – if you let Pettis get into a rhythm, it's going to be a long night for Cowboy or a quick night. Meaning that he's going to get finished or he's going to get a clinic put on him, man. Pettis is that good, but it's all about disrupting the rhythm. If Cowboy disrupts the rhythm, I think he has a chance to win. And if Pettis is able to get into a rhythm, I think he's going to make it look fairly easy. So we'll see. I'm officially going to take Pettis by decision, or maybe I could see him finishing Cowboy as well. I don't think he'll tap him out. I think he could knock him out. Yeah, and like if Cowboy is going to win this fight, pressure, 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 volume, 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 volume. Like, you got to keep the gas on, man. And you might get Pettis to weather a little bit, right? Whittle, whatever the fucking word is. All right, but I think that wraps it up. Like I said, I got to hop off here, and I've got a few more notes to get ready for the main card. I'll drop a podcast for that maybe later tonight, but probably tomorrow by the time I get everything ready and kind of compile everything that I want to talk about. But, yeah, like I said, at the beginning of the podcast, we just crossed the 100 subscriber line. So thank all of you guys so much. If you guys are interested in the podcast, please hit the subscribe button so you can keep up to date with everything. What else? Oh, if you are listening right now on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from, this is also available on YouTube. So check us out there. And obviously vice versa. If you're watching on YouTube and you just want to hear the audio, we have this thing is distributed across like most major podcasting platform services like Spotify, iTunes, Google Play Store, etc. Right? So let's see. Anything else? I think I covered it. As always, leave your opinions in the comment section. Let me know who you guys think is going to win the fights. And yeah, have a good day. Thank you for tuning in. Bye-bye.